long combination, too, by Perez.
Drink some water, DC.
Get yourself a drink, big guy.
I need one. I'm not just a professional. I'm the Michael Jordan of commentary. Somebody on
I'd say Charles
Barkley. I said it's like the flu game.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I don't know about the Michael Jordan, but your ego is as big as the country of Jordan, and it's one of my favorite things about you. Good morning, Daniel.
Oh, man. Oh, welcome to another episode of Good Guy, Bad Guy. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's Chael Sonnen. Chael, they had to carry me off the court. I'm hanging on Dominic Cruz and John Gooden as they're walking me back to the locker room after seven long hours. It was like the flu game. I couldn't talk, but I got through it, Doug. Yo, they couldn't believe that I said I was in the flu game. That was funny. That was funny. I get tired of these little dudes messing with me.
Rise and grind, my man. By the way, I'm going around the clock. I am not around the clock guy. I was not around the clock guy in college. I got my little princess isn't feeling so hot. You want to know something else? What do you think about coffee in a shot? What do you think when I do this? Does this look cool?
No.
Because you know what?
No.
They edited out all of my coffee shots last week. I went and got these generic cups, no brand name. Then every now and then, I take a drink. I'm not even thirsty. I take a drink for looks. Like when I'm taking a pause, I take a drink. They edit them out. What do you think, DC? No good?
Let me tell you something. That is the universal cup that everybody has in their house until I went to Monday Night Raw and they gave me this. Look, they gave me this thing. So now I drink out of this thing. Hey, chill. But that cup right there, I could tell you exactly where you got it. I could tell you exactly what it costs because every one of us have that cup in our house. You grab it, you jump in your truck, and you go about your day. It's the perfect cup. They should not be editing that out. ESPN, stop editing Jail's coffee cup. There's nothing wrong with it. There's no markers.
It's a move. This is a theatrical performance at times. All right, let's get into some MMA because I got something to tell you.
Oh, you
do? You got to team me up, but I got something to tell you.
Okay, all right. All right. So, Max Holloway is still on his victory tour. Oh, my God. He's getting so annoying. Jail, he's getting so annoying. Everywhere I turn, I see Max Holloway gloating about his knockout. Okay, Max. Oh, you're so cool. You are the BMF. Sure. All right. It's all fine and dandy. But then he starts to make fun of the boy. So then I take offense to it. That's why I'm being a little bit of a hater. But he was on Joe Rogan's podcast last weekend. And he starts to speak of his ideal world, right? Fight for the 145-pound title. Then go back up to 155 and fight whoever is holding the championship there. Does that excite you? Because Max Holloway, after that tremendous performance, would seem to have any option that he wants to have out in the UFC right now.
He's got a hold of the right tool. He's got it by the wrong end. So let me just rework this timeline real fast. Max leading in to Gaethje is a 2-1 underdog. He had confidence in himself, and every time he spoke, he said, I'm going to win this belt, but I'm going back to 145. Even Islam's looking around just a little bit and saying, hey, do you want my opinion first? Do you want me to call you out? You want to do a little back and forth? Like, Max was dead set on featherweight. Now, the reason I tell you that, there wasn't a better idea for Ilya Topuria. As a matter of fact, Ilya Topuria was so without an opponent, if you will, that he was kind of thinking about Sean O'Malley because he had no other options. As soon as Max wins, sure enough, Max is going to take
wait,
all that
chill,
fame.
Chill,
he's going to slide
wait,
down.
Chill,
go ahead.
Chill.
Go
wait,
ahead.
Chill. Wait, chill. That's that, one thing that, okay, that's not on the rundown, but that's something I've been dying to ask you. You said Ilya was looking at Sean O'Malley because he doesn't have anybody else, but he does. He's got guys. I don't understand what Ilya Topuria is doing, Chill. I don't get when you're telling Max you won't fight him, Ortega you won't fight him, you're not fighting Volkanovski in a rematch. You're turning out all these guys. Who would he fight in his division if he doesn't want to fight any of these guys, Chael, when he ain't fighting Avloyev, right? Would you fight Avloyev right now? He's down in the rankings. He's undefeated Russian dude and only wants to wrestle. He ain't your boy's not riding hot anymore. The Arnold Allen is not riding hot anymore. He got beat. Aljamain Sterling didn't look great in his featherweight debut. There really is no one. But he's batting everybody off. Like he has a ton of options. I don't get it.
I love what you just said because it was actually my next step in the timeline, which is as soon as Max wins this, Topuria tells him no. Topuria tells him, you know, I'm not that interested. As a matter of fact, Max, not only have you had three shots here and you failed, and I stopped the guy that stopped you, I've got more interest in Brian Ortega, unless, of course, you are willing to put up the BMF belt. Now, that is actually what I want to discuss, because that is what Max revealed to Joe Rogan. He said, I'll do it and I'll put it up. And DC, I just want to offer you this. Dana White and the UFC has a problem, and they need to address it. And it is the BMF belt, and that has caught fire in a way that they did not expect. And we've got to get some parameters around it. I would tell you this. You know what I'd like for Max to say, and I realize this is just bellyhoo here, but hear me out. I want Max to say, you know what, Ilya? I'm going to come down to 145. You said, if I don't put my belt up, you're going to fight Brian Ortega. I'm going to come to 45, and I'm going to offer that same belt to Brian Ortega. Make Brian Ortega publicly choose. Does he want the featherweight title opportunity, or does he want the BMF? And I only tell you that because I think the BMF is a lot bigger than the UFC is aware, and I'm not sure Brian Ortega doesn't go after it instead.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with the BMF title. It's grown to a point now where it's so popular, only because, Chael, and this is, I loved the idea when it was happening, but I also recognize it could become a problem because now you had championship-level fighters fighting for it. When Jorge Masvidal fought Nate Diaz the first time, it didn't seem like those guys were in title contention, right? Masvidal actually turned into a championship opportunity for Masvidal, but that was only because Kamaru Usman's original opponent at the time fell out of the title fight. So Masvidal ended up being the guy that stepped in on short notice. You remember the whole flying overseas in a private plane, stopping to get pizza in Italy. It was a cool deal that made George Masvidal a big-time star. But when you start putting guys like Justin Gaethje, who was the number one contender at the time, against Dustin Poirier, who was also one of the top lightweights in the world, had just fought for a title recently, and then they fight. And then you say, okay, now we deal with Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje, and they fight. Now you got these guys that are all hanging around the championship, and when they become BMF title championship or title holder, now they have something that makes them even more valuable than just their resume. Their resume says you are a title contender. But then when you have that championship belt, now it's more than that. So now Max has options in two weight classes because of it. That's not a bad thing for Max Holloway. I don't think it's a bad thing for the UFC. I just think that now, what happens if Max Holloway wins the featherweight championship? Now he's got the BMF title and the UFC championship. Or Ilya Topuria. You can't have it be title versus title because it's not that way in all the weight classes. It's a belt that is defended between 145 and 155. Originally it was at 170. It moved, Chael. How often does a belt move without the champion getting beat for the belt? The belt was just moved down a weight class because Masvidal didn't fight anymore. So it's not sustainable to keep it in that realm with those guys. It needs to be a belt that guys are fighting for that are fun, but not really wrapped into the championship picture.
That's my thought. Daniel, I love what you're saying, but let me ask you something and personalize this. So Max had the 45-pound title, just as you had the 205-pound title. Max now has a title at 155 pounds that technically he could go to 170, he could go to 158 and a half. I mean, he has a little bit of options here. What have you chosen to go back down? I mean, if you were to choose, what is it about that 45-pound belt? And I understood when it was Volkanovski. I understood when Max did not want to run and have success elsewhere, but it's not Volkanovski now. He's got no grievance with Ilya Topuria. He's about to have one, but he doesn't have one. Would you stay up or would you go down?
So I had the option, right? When I was the heavyweight and the light heavyweight champion, I had the option to go back down to fight at 205 or stay up at heavyweight. I chose to stay up at heavyweight because I knew how difficult it was to cut the weight. I knew how hard it was to get down there. Again, especially after I had spent 5 years, Chael, 5 years, I believe, making 205 and had forgotten what it felt like to go all the way back down there. I recognized that on days I didn't want to get up at 6 a.m. to do anything extra, I didn't have to because I could just pick the work up at 12, just do a little bit more. Whereas when I was cutting weight, I had to put workout on top of workout on top of workout to make sure that I was burning enough calories. I had no desire to do that. I didn't want to go back through the pain of getting back down there, especially when I turned 40 years old. I was like, there's no way. I just come off back surgery. I'm 40. I'd rather fight the heavier guy instead of putting my body through that. Max Holloway's still young. He's been around for a long time, but he's still in his early 30s. So the weight still comes off of Max. And I believe that his pride tells him that he's the featherweight champion of the world. Because if you remember, before Volkanovski's reign, we were all starting to universally call Max Holloway the best featherweight of all time. And I don't know that he's ready to let that crown or that honor or that the way we speak of him go. I think that matters to him. And he also recognizes in legacy, Gio, it's much easier to go back to 45, win the belt back, and we start going, well, it's the greatest featherweight of all time, regardless of what happened against Volkanovski. Then going up to 55, having to beat Islam, having to beat all these other big guys and start a new run that will then lead to us going, well, I think this guy might be better than BJ Penn ever was at 155, or Khabib Nurmagomedov. Who is the greatest lightweight of all time, in your opinion? I don't even know, because it's been so difficult to hold on to that championship.
It would be Khabib. Khabib was the most dominant fighter of all time. But Daniel, I actually, if I can just shift on you, because I wanted to ask you something else, which is about Gaethje, because he made some comments as well. Gaethje said, I want you to hear this, because he's right. Gaethje's right. Listen to what he said. My opportunity to get a title shot, there's a little more distance between it now, but it's not impossible. In fact, I just beat Dustin, and Dustin's getting one. That's all true. I'm not predicting for you that Justin is going to get one, but I will predict for you that there is still some very big matches in his future if he starts to align things properly. I love the idea of Gaethje versus Conor. They had a little back and forth. Actually, the sweepstakes for Conor McGregor ended up falling on Chandler, but they almost went to Gaethje. Just to remind you, what are your thoughts on Gaethje right now?
You know, I spoke to Dustin Poirier, Chael, for my YouTube channel before he fought in Miami, and I asked him, I said, what do you think about you in terms of the title picture? Well, he said, I am always one great win from fighting for a belt. He goes out and knocks out Benoit Saint-Denis. Islam doesn't have an opponent. Bang, insert Dustin Poirier. It always works. And I believe that Justin Gaethje is in the same situation. Justin Gaethje is one win away from ultimately standing across the octagon from the champion, because he's that popular, he's been that important, and all of the things that he's accomplished since he got to the UFC. Now, I was jokingly saying that Max had been on his victory tour, right? And he's everywhere. But we had not heard from Justin Gaethje until very recently. And he started to reflect on the loss. And the one thing that stood out to me that I love as a buddy of Justin's is he said he's taking time, Chael. Most people will want to get right back in there. But Justin is going to take time. It's complete opposites. Think about this, Chael. Now, different level of knockout, right? Justin Gaethje got knocked out completely. Jamahal Hill got knocked down, right? Jamahal Hill's already got a fight scheduled. Justin Gaethje said, I'm taking at least 6 months. What do you make of the statements that Gaethje made when reflecting on his BMF title loss?
I will, of course, support it. I mean, I've got to tell you, some of these guys, they get so close to the trees that they can't see the forest. And I mean in a very positive way. Like, they don't have an arrogance. They remain humble. They remain hungry. I got to give Max and Justin both that credit. I'm not sure that they're aware that they just had a Hall of Fame future fight. That will go into the hall. That round will go into the hall. They will both go into a hall. I mean, not for nothing. I don't know that they know that. One thing on Justin Gaethje, and it's very hard to be critical of his career because he's done everything right. I would go as far as to tell you nobody has had a debut in the UFC as strong as Justin Gaethje's. If you'll remember, right after he got done fighting Michael, he gets announced to go on to the Ultimate Fighter. That's how much the UFC liked him. But one thing that Gaethje never does is he never calls for an opponent. And I do mean ever. That Max fight, he did not call for. Fitzaev, just for example, He never called for it and ended up in there with Fazaev. And I only suggest that maybe Gaethje wants to take a look at the board and adjust and align himself just a little bit. I think he can get the Conor fight, right? Everybody wants Conor, and I understand that. But I just think that Gaethje is that big. I think that what he just did is that worthy. I forget that he lost. I mean, you want to tell me he lost the fight? Okay, fine. I don't feel like he lost. That $300,000 bonus didn't feel like he lost. But I think you understand my point. If he wants a break right now, we definitely need to give it to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look, Justin Gaethje is a caveman, chill. He does some crazy stuff, man. I mean, when being around that dude, it's almost like he's lost and he's living in this world when he should be living on a whole different planet. The way he operates is crazy, but he's a genuinely good dude and he's very aware. And sometimes when you get those blood and guts fighters like Justin Gaethje, you don't think that they're as aware as Justin Gaethje is. He's aware of everything, and he recognizes that you have got to allow your brain to reset after that. I got knocked out one time in my career. I did not fight from that time until the next year. You got to give yourself time to try to come back from this. You don't want those lights shut off and then trying to step back into the octagon. You know, Justin Gaethje saying that, right, made zero excuses, chill, didn't say he felt bad going to the octagon. Didn't say this went wrong. He tipped the cap to Max. He said Max fought a great fight. The one thing he did say, though, he said, I remember even when I was fighting Cowboy, a guy that I looked up to and I was his friend, he knocked me out in sparring, and I wanted to get that back, so I had that desire to hurt him. He goes, I never got that with Max Holloway. I never felt that with Max Holloway because he was never on my radar. He said, I needed to make him a bigger threat going into the fight. Then I may have been able to compete better. Is that a real thing, Chael, where if you and I were to fight, I never viewed you as an opponent because you're at the weight below me. You were my buddy from college wrestling. You were Chael Sonnen. But I never looked at you as a guy that would fight. But Chael, I didn't do that with Dan Henderson either. But when we got into the octagon, my fight or flight was so great that I just fought him in the way that I fought him. But was that a thing for you? Because Justin said he needs to make his opponents feel like they threatened him. He said he never got that with Max.
Yeah, I actually can relate to that. And on a limited scale, but there was guys that you would look up to or you would look at and say, I appreciate his style. I appreciate his skills. I would like to move my feet a little more like him. I mean, just for example, and then Daniel, I was a lot like you. I was changing weight classes too from 85 and stopped off at 205, went all the way up to heavyweight. So now some of these guys that I thought I was clear to like and admire, I'm getting contracts against. And it was tough. I'll tell you what, every big upset, and it doesn't matter if it was Michael Phelps by a stroke in the pool, a volleyball game, or UFC where Gaethje was a 2-1 favorite. Every upset has one thing in common, which is the person that gets upset finds himself in a contest that was harder than they thought it was going to be. And Justin Gaethje really did talk about it. You know, he paid Max that credit. And I wish that Gaethje would have gone just a little bit further, because I think what he was trying to say is that Max was big enough and had more power. He knew the volume was going to be there. I think Max could take a better shot and give a better shot. Justin never quite finished that thought. But when I just talked to you about these wonderful opportunities and what is going to happen, I cannot believe we have had a fight that good. I mean, a fight this good that is spoken about and revered after it's done has not happened in our sport since Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner, and everybody talked about a rematch. I'm not saying let's throw these guys in a rematch. I will point out to you, I'm a little surprised there is no talk of a rematch. That kind of surprises me. The greatest fight you've ever seen, we generally would do it again.
It kind of felt like Max was ahead of him for the majority of the fight, and it just feels like they're pushing him forward. It's almost like when you're in wrestling, Chael, and you could feel a storyline coming together and being ended. And it's time for one guy to go here, one guy to go here, and that's what I feel like. You know what I do love the most, though, about Justin Gaethje saying I'm taking 6 months, Chael? Think about this, Chael P. Justin Gaethje said he's off 6 months, April. So if he says six, it may turn into eight. But look, if he takes that time, he can be off when Islam fights Dustin. In that six-month window, whoever wins that fight will fight Arman Tsarukyan. In that six-month window, Conor McGregor will fight Michael Chandler. In the time that he's going to be away, Chael, when he comes back, the whole division may be completely different. It may be a time where, because in that time also, Fazeev's probably going to be back. Mateus Gamrot is probably going to fight again. All those great young fighters will get their opportunities, so the division may look different. And Justin Gaethje may say, I come back, I fight Benoit Saint-Denis, or I fight Mateus Gamrot, I look great here, bam, title shot. Because the title picture has already started to work itself out during the time that you were away, right? So I think it's great not only for him in terms of resting his brain, but I think it's great because you can sit back and look at everything from the side and watch these absolute savages go kill each other. And then when you come back, you go, maybe I'll take that guy. Or because you're Justin Gaethje, right? If Justin Gaethje goes to the UFC and says, I want Mateus Gamrot, they'll go, nobody wants Mateus Gamrot. We'll give him to you. Because nobody wanted Fazeev, and Gaethje said, okay. It's one of those times where it just works. We know that Dustin's next. We know that Tsarukyan is going to be in the fall, and I think it gives Justin time. So that's another factor that I love with him taking time away. Because I don't know when I see what are my thoughts on his next matchup, because I don't know what the division looks like down the line 6 months from right now.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Sure. And one thing about Gaethje, I've never heard him call somebody out. I could be wrong on the second Poirier fight, but you get my point, broad stroke. And I've never heard him get called out. So his break is going to line right up with Madison Square Garden. He's going to return. Hey, Daniel, I had a moment with Justin Gaethje one time. We had a very sentimental moment. There used to be an organization called the World Series of Fighting, and I was their commentator. Justin Gaethje was their champion. So this is before the world knew who Gaethje was. I'm sitting there and watching, man. He was about the most excited guy I've ever seen fight. Years later, my light was diminishing and dimming, and his was starting to brighten. And I saw him at the World MMA Awards. I was hosting it. We were in the bathroom, and he stops me as I'm drying my hands, and he stops me, and he says, hey, remember in the World Series of Fighting, remember when you used to commentate my fights? And I said, yeah, Justin, yeah. I know he's about to give me a nice compliment. He says, yeah, I remember that too. I said, thank you, Justin, and I walked out the door. But he tried to have a moment with me. He tried, and it's the thought that counts, right? I don't know where he was planning to go with that, but he was planning to say, he was shining me up somewhere, at least in his heart.
He doesn't have that. Like, he's a killer. I'm telling you, bro. I went to a restaurant with him in Miami because I lost money to him on the golf course. He ate so much A5 Wagyu I had a $1,500 bill, and he wouldn't put his credit card down because he said that I never pay him once he beats me on the golf course. He ate more jail than I had seen in a long time, and he's a savage. I mean, he looks like he's a caveman. The blood's dripping off of his face. It's barely cooked. The dude's absolutely insane, and I love him for it. I love Max, too, man, so I give Max a hard time, but Max is my boy, man. We had a conversation the other day with all of his subscribers because they were like, DC was mad that Justin got knocked out. No, like we talked about, you just feel the horror in how bad the knockout was. But, Chael, I go to Brazil this weekend. You work Brazil this weekend. And it's a great fight card to the people that know. But we know that UFC 302, UFC 303, and down the line, all those stars start to come back. But the biggest star, Conor McGregor, is on the verge of coming back against Michael Chandler, finally. So you start to know when it's real, when you start hearing from the teams. And Conor McGregor's coach had some things to say about the Michael Chandler fight. He said, I said this from the start. I see similarities from the Mendez fight. I'd be surprised if it goes two rounds. Conor hits too hard. He's too sharp. Is there going to be scrappiness? Maybe a few takedowns and stuff. Maybe. But every round starts on the feet. And his ability to get back there is underestimated. So I'd be surprised if this fight between Conor and Michael Chandler sees two rounds. Chael, what do you make of Coach Kavanaugh saying that he believes this guy not only wins, but he wins impressively, and he wins it very early?
Well, I will tell you this. Coach Kavanaugh does not have a history of bluffing. He's always very straight. Look, I think that Conor McGregor is the better fighter. I think Conor McGregor is quicker. He's a little bit longer. He's got a much more awkward style. Chandler is more straightforward. But I don't know that I can say that Conor McGregor is a better competitor. I really don't know that I can say that. Yeah. I don't know that he's got his eye on the ball and he's got the eye of the tiger. Now, it is one of those things where it's a little bit of speculation, right? A guy returning from a layoff is very hard, particularly to go into five rounds. A guy returning with a leg injury and going into five rounds. And Daniel, I'll steal an example that you gave for us about 3 weeks ago, but was Chris Weidman talking about when he returned against Brad Tavares, that it was three rounds and you were glad that it was three rounds, that five would have been too much. I mean, I just tell you, there's just so many questions out there. If I go back to Coach Kavanaugh, and this was for a different fight, it was about 2 years ago, but he said about Conor McGregor, if I am going to train him and he's going to come back to this gym, before that happens, we are going to sit down in private and he is going to tell me why. Why is he coming back? Why does he want to do this? I am not going to put him in there and go through this process just because it's what he's used to doing. And I only offer you that because Coach Kavanaugh has a history of being very straight. And I am wondering what he's seeing. I'm curious if Conor's getting some of that size down, some of that speed's coming back. Pretty big compliment from Coach Kavanaugh.
So does it have to be then? Does it have to be an early knockout? Because we wonder if he can go the entirety of the fight. Because I will tell you this much, Chris Weidman looked much better in the last fight opposed to the first fight back because of the uncertainty, because of the fear of the kicks. Here's the thing. And I had a phone call with Michael Chandler the other day. God, I love Michael Chandler. He understands the business. He understands that when we talk about him or we have to critique him or we talk about, you're talking about him. Chael, guys, stop getting mad when Chael or I make a YouTube video. Stop getting mad when Chael and I are on our show talking about you on ESPN. Stop getting mad. You're getting talked about. That is what Michael Chandler gets. Regardless if it's good or bad, he's getting talked about and it's in the news. You're making statements about him. So I'm speaking to Mike the other day and he told me the idea that I am the right fight for Conor McGregor builds intrigue, Chael. He goes, it builds intrigue. He said, it'll make more eyes watch because they think they can see a vintage Conor McGregor performance. But in that night, on that night, when they come expecting the Conor of old, the guy that knocked out Aldo, the guy that looks so good against Eddie Alvarez, they will see Michael Chandler just demolishing them. And I will show them that the times have changed and I will be a bigger star than I've ever been. That is, hey, he gets it. That right there, Chael, tells me how much Mike gets it. Yeah, come to see Conor. Come to hope that this is the ideal matchup for him. And when you show up, I'm going to smash him. I love that. I love that for Michael Chandler. And I love that he recognizes the opportunity that he is on the doorstep of with this guy coming back from the injury. In regards to Coach Kavanaugh, I believe it. I believe he thinks his guy looks like that. But I also know that everybody thought Conor was going to be able to compete against Floyd Mayweather. He did pretty good. Everybody thought that he would be able to compete against Khabib. He did pretty good. They don't lie, but I just don't know how much you're protecting him in the training room because it can be false. It can be very false, Chael, because I remember 2 years ago, my best little wrestler, Daniel Zapata, broke his arm 9 weeks before the state tournament. He wanted to wrestle. He had a surgery. He wanted to wrestle. He came to practice, Chael, and for the whole postseason, he looked really good because the kids weren't as good, and his teammates were protecting him in practice. They weren't chopping at his arm. They weren't really doing any damage to the arm. But when we got to the state tournament, a kid grabbed it and tried to put it on his back. I had to throw in the towel and stop the matches. So how much are they protecting Conor and his leg in the training room to allow him to look that good opposed to what Mike's going to try to do when they're locked in the octagon?
Yeah, it's a speed issue. And Daniel, and all of our listeners have heard this, but and it's more true with boxing than MMA, but when somebody gets knocked out, they're not the same. They're not the same in their next performance. The reason for that isn't that their chin goes, as I've heard many announcers say. It's because they second-guess themselves. Every pistol offense that you do, every time you extend an arm to attack your opponent, that's when you're open and susceptible to get hit back, and all of a sudden you turn into a little bit of a deer in the headlights. Daniel, that's just with a knockout. This is an injury that I cannot relate to. This is an injury that Conor McGregor is dealing with. I had one conversation with Anderson Silva, who had a very similar injury. And he was very gracious, but he just said, I wasn't the same when I came back. I told myself I was, but I couldn't quite train the same. He was a big running guy, Anderson Silva. He couldn't get the running in the gym, and it was one of the ways that he built his confidence. And he just shared this with me just recently. About 8 months ago, I saw Anderson, had lunch with him, might surprise you. I didn't know that. And to understand what Conor McGregor's up against, to find out that Conor tried to get this to be a three-round fight, I think that he's very aware of what he's got going on. And I only say that to you not to diminish Conor's, to let you know when you talk about that Coach Kavanaugh said he's going to stop him in two, yes, he's going to have to stop him in two. I do not believe that Conor McGregor could go a decision 25 minutes and get his hand raised.
You know, those injuries, Chael, the big ones, they change you. Because once my back went out and I did that surgery, I should have walked away. Conor knows, just like I knew going into those last two fights with Miocic, we all know. But like you said, you're so used to doing something. You have to have your coach go to you and say, I'm not going to let you do something because this is what you're used to doing. I'm going to let you do this because I know you can do it at the level that you want to. Granted, the athlete may not listen. Because I didn't listen. I know that my coaches were like, DC, you're not able to work like you used to. I'm like, but I want to fight. I want to fight. I want to fight. The money's too good. Everything's too great right now. Those injuries change you. And with time, especially with that one that Conor had, confidence will grow with time after doing the action in live action, fighting, kicking. Because, dude, Weidman threw that leg, that kick the other day.
Sure.
30 times. He threw it 30 times. When in the first time back, he couldn't throw it at all. But one thing that saves him also is that Mike is not a big kicker. Mike is a guy that does his hands with his boxing. So that also plays to Conor's benefit. Chael, we've always said we would do fan questions, right? Before we go, we'll do a quick fan question because I don't want to promise fans things and take it from them. So let's get a fan question. I understand, this is from Derek Dubrovny. He goes, I understand that there's a lot that goes into preparing for and sanctioning a fight, and therefore a lot of reasons that a fight can get canceled. But what was it specifically that prevented you two from fighting each other? I mean, who would have won? First off, Chael, part of the reason was we were in different weight classes, right? We were in different weight classes almost the entirety of our careers. I was a heavyweight, you're an 85-pounder. When I was at 205, you were still an 85-pounder. But, other than that, I would have kicked your ass.
And I will, And I will tell you, I'll answer Derek's question because Daniel was being a little bit nicer. We never talk about practice room stories. I just did a podcast with Jay Glazer, and Jay Glazer was telling the story of when you and I sparred in his gym, and you gave me a front teep, which for somebody that might not know, it's where you pick your foot up and you just kick the guy straight on in the body. And he sent me across the room, and Daniel and I were supposed to go three rounds. He jumps on top of me, and he's pounding me. Then after two rounds, the coaches go, you guys are done. You guys are going a little bit too hard. So... who would have won? I guess who knows. Who won that day in Glazer's gym? I'd say Daniel Cormier won.
This dude, Chael Sonnen, you like to give me props. You at some point you're gonna hit me and it's gonna hurt a lot because you prop me up. This is classic star building. You build them up, then you punch them in the stomach. Just know, Chael, I see you coming. The setup has been started, guys. Catch Chael and I every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcast. Find us on YouTube, ESPN Plus, and ESPN 2. Don't miss The Good Guy and The Bad Guy twice a week everywhere you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, for Chael Sonnen, I'm Daniel Cormier. We'll catch you on the next one. Peace.